This morning I would like to read one of the lessons that's well known to all of us. It's the Magnificat. It occurs as the gospel for the last Sunday of the church year, Christ the King Sunday. I think in the cycle we're on now, but I'm not positive about that. It's also a text, one of the lessons for one of the other cycles, and I can't recall which Sunday it comes in, or if it's used as a psalm or as a gospel. But nevertheless, here it is, and as you know, it's loaded with implications regarding our relationship to the poor and the Lord's concern for them, and it's a justice text. Mary said, "My heart praises the Lord. My soul is glad because of God my Savior, for he has remembered me, his lowly servant. And from now on all people will call me blessed because of the great things the mighty God has done for me. His name is holy. He shows mercy to all who fear him from one generation to another. He stretched out his arm and scattered the proud people with all their plans. He brought down mighty kings from their thrones and lifted up the lowly. He filled the hungry with good things and sent the rich away with empty hands. He kept the promise he made to our ancestors. He came to the help of his servant Israel and remembered to show mercy to Abraham and to all his descendants forever." Let's pray. Lord, you do indeed remember us with your mercy and love in ways that exceed our comprehension and certainly exceed what we deserve. You are the God who extends help and your presence to the hungry and send the rich empty away. We ask, Lord, that you not send us away empty, for we come to you as beggars, come in need. And as you fill us with your grace, your compassion, please enable us to return to the world as givers and sharers and receivers, so that with our brothers and sisters, we may all enjoy the bounty that you provided for us and celebrate together the life of the kingdom. Through Jesus Christ our Lord. Amen. Okay, I've been looking forward to today very much because I get easy and Jenny is going to do all the work. Jenny Nelson here is a wife of Daryl Nelson, who is the village artist this summer. And you may have seen Jenny around with some little kids. That's what she does when she's not doing other things. Jenny happens to be a state coordinator in South Dakota of Bread for the World. So today we're going to talk about Bread for the World and how it can happen locally, how people can plug in and do things with a local group or within the congregation, or you know, wherever you perhaps sense a need or want to know how something can work. Jenny comes with a lot of on-hands experience. She knows what it is to do some grassroots organizing. Worked with a lot of people in South Dakota, so I'm just going to turn it over to Jenny and let her talk, and then we'll open it up.
Okay. Good morning. And, well, I guess it's almost afternoon. As you see, I have a lot of material here. And the title might have been a little bit misleading because probably the majority of what I'm going to be talking about is connected with Bread for the World. But I am also going to be talking about some other resources that you could take back to your community that are not directly connected to Bread for the World. But I'm sure many of you have been to art sessions this week. Unfortunately, I had a cold, and so I've been in bed for the past 3 days. So if my voice goes out, you'll know why. But I don't want to be redundant. I hope I won't be redundant. But does everyone here know what Bread for the World is? Okay, does anyone not know?
Here you go. How about a little short synopsis?
All right. I'll just give a short synopsis. Bread for the World is a Christian citizens lobby organization that works both on domestic and international food legislation. And why don't I just read the first paragraph, because that probably could put it better than I could say it. Bread for the World is a Christian citizens movement, the only national citizens lobby focusing solely on hunger. Our members work to obtain government policies that give hungry people a chance. We contact our elected leaders and seek bipartisan support for measures that offer dignity and opportunity to those who are desperately poor. And I think that puts it pretty much in a nutshell. And when it says citizens lobby, what it means is that the lobby is worked on by the people. We have people who are paid who work in Washington, D.C. But for the most part, the power behind the lobby is the citizens, mainly through the avenue of writing letters or calling. I always add calling because I, at this point in my life right now, do not write because I have two small children and I'm writing and doing other things in writing, and I have a toll-free number, and I also have, we have local offices in our town of our elected officials, and so I just call. And it has the same impact. Some say a letter and a call is a little bit different, but I do get letters back from my calls. If any of you have not written a letter before, this would be a very good brochure for you to take right here at the top. And it's a guide to effective letter writing on hunger issues, because this is one of the main thrusts behind Bread for the World, is contacting our elected officials and letting them know how we feel about issues. You'll say, well, how do I find out about how I feel about issues, or get a little bit of background? Bread for the World, every month, if you join Bread for the World, puts out a newsletter. And I find this newsletter very helpful because it tells you about the issue, and then at the bottom, wherever you see on the newsletter, a check. It says here, if your representative has co-sponsored H Resolution 15, thank him or her and urge that he or she vote for, okay, tells you what to do. And I find that very helpful because many of us, if we've never written a letter to our congresspeople, we would find it rather intimidating. And so this gives you, it lays out for you the issue and then also what you might want to say to them. But in one paragraph, you really can't get an idea about an issue oftentimes. And so Bread for the World periodically puts out background papers on issues. And this particular one, this is a sample of the July newsletter, so it's rather recent. And this is a background paper on unemployment. And you're welcome to take one. And they're right here. And I've had many people, well, we did a statistical, I guess you'd call it statistical because we did it of the whole state, survey of the state of South Dakota to find out what our membership wanted to do, because we were feeling like South Dakota is the type of state that's quite sparsely populated. We only have approximately 600,000 people in our state, and we're 45th down the line as far as population density. And so we're pretty spread out, people who have ranches of 10,000 acres or whatever. And so we called. We got a hold of some toll-free lines that we were able to use, and we called, and we found out that for the most part, our membership, what they wanted to do was to have their action mainly be limited to reading the newsletter and writing letters. So in South Dakota, I would say as far as our organizing effort, we do a lot of other things, but we feel that the consensus, at least at this point, it might change, is that letter writing is one of the strongest ways that our membership wants to work. But some people say, well, I'd really love to write a letter, but I really don't get around to it. One idea that you might want to do in your area is what we call offering of letters. And the offering of letters has different issues that that Bread for the World focuses on each year. And in this past Congress session, it was the Preventing Hunger at Home resolution. And maybe I'll stop right now, because have you explained that? Maybe this would be a good time to just
touched on it a little bit. I don't know if I really explained it.
But this is something that we had a concentrated effort for our letters going at and going for. And so, Nate, why don't you explain that?
All right. If I'm repeating myself, just start falling asleep or something like that. our major campaign this year was to get through Congress a resolution that we had introduced in January called Preventing Hunger at Home. Basically, the thrust of it was saying no more cutbacks on food assistance programs here in the state. And there were some other features, too. We were asking for some, in some cases, for funding to be restored or to keep up with the possibly expanding need. And also that the federal government retain its responsibility for these programs. Not that in principle we had anything against their being turned over to the states, except that the states fluctuate enormously in terms of their willingness and ability to respond to those needs. I mean, we've seen that. It's been all too evident. And nutritional needs, of course, don't vary from state to state. So anyway, that was the thrust of the resolution. It has passed the Senate. We expect it to pass the House in September because we have almost a majority of House members now on its sponsors. But it's already served most of its purpose, and that is to be a rallying point in Congress for saying, you know, I'm not going to cut back. And it looks now as though there are going to be at least some increases in funding of several of the programs. So.
And I think that this brings a point that I really wanted to say at the very beginning, and that is that on a grassroots level, the way I feel about Bread for the World is that Bread for the World is an advocacy program. I mean, I don't know if that's we're being advocates for those who do not have a voice or are not using their voice, and those are the poor. Not only the poor here in the United States, but also the poor all over the world, because our policies, as far as particularly our development aid, has effect on people all over the world. And we who are involved in Bread for the World have a desire to see those funds that are being distributed through our Congress be put in ways that we feel are helping the poor, and that not just perpetuating a system that is focusing on an elite to the, quote, demise of the masses. So, as I said about the newsletter, another background paper that also came with the, they usually come in the newsletter, is explaining the Preventing Hunger at Home, and you might be interested in seeing this, and this is called Hunger at Home, Hard Times in the U.S. We talked about writing letters or calling. Another thing that Bread for the World, I want to talk a little bit more, is we mentioned the offering of letters. And this last year with the Preventing Hunger at Home resolution, something that you might want to do in your community as far as the offering of letters, there's a many different ways that this has been done. I'll just mention two different ways that has been done in congregations. One that I thought was a creative idea was that the church had a quote, continental breakfast, and people would come in and they would enter the normally the community room. And they would be, as they entered, would be given a piece of paper and an envelope and a self-addressed envelope to the congressperson. And then you would sit down and write a letter on the issue that had been at hand, which this year was the Preventing Hunger at Home resolution. And then in order to get your breakfast, you had to hand the person the letter with the stamp on it and all ready to go in the mail. And that was your ticket to get your breakfast. And I thought that was a creative way of having both letter writing and having some fellowship. Another way is if you have a church that perhaps has set aside a Sunday for hunger awareness, you might want to have a shorter sermon, and at the beginning of the church service, when people are entering, they would be given the piece of paper and the envelope and all the and a pencil, and then there would be a shortened sermon, and there would be time during the service itself that you could write the letter, and the minister, whoever was in charge of that, could explain what you were writing the letter about, and then the congregation as a whole would be writing a letter right there in the service. And then oftentimes, as the collection plate is passed around, you put the letter in. And I think you would be in a better position than myself to speak about the impact that perhaps offerings of letters in the past have had. Maybe more if you see that, you, I mean, if you've had any comments from any congresspeople on this.
Yeah, well, it varies somewhat from year to year depending on the issue, and but our experience has been that it's a very effective way of building a lot of public support for an issue and getting lots of mail into Congress on it. So what we target and what we, the issue that we're carrying with the offering of letters usually gets a great deal of attention in Congress. And we, for example, some of the things that we've had in the past have been the right to food resolution, which was really the most far-reaching declaration of intent on Congress that Congress had ever adopted. Two grain reserves, a farmer-held grain reserve and a companion government-owned reserve. We've had aid reform legislation passed through the offering. One year we did letters to President Carter urging him to take some initiative on the hunger issue. He later did appoint a commission. Now, you know, you never know exactly that the offering was just the thing that made the difference, but it could very well have. And as I say, this year it's been the Preventing Hunger at Home. Next year, we're starting this fall, actually, we're going to be pushing a substantial increase in development assistance going for specially earmarked categories and for a moratorium on increased military assistance to developing countries. So.
It's a way of mobilizing a large number of people on an issue. And talking about mobilizing people on an issue, another thing, another resource that you might want to incorporate in your community or your church is called a quick line or a phone tree. Have any of you ever been part of a phone tree or a quick line in your community on any issue?
I never got a call, but,
but you were on it. Was it on the hunger issue or on an
Bread for the World?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay. We have what is called the Bread for the World quick line. I'm also on a few other quick lines, but this is a tool that you can use to mobilize a large number of people in a very short period of time on an issue that needs to be acted on, normally within 24 to 48 hours. That's what I would say would be the, normally is how quickly we're asked to act on this. An example would be if we would get a call and there was a, we had a particular senator that was on the Appropriations Committee and they were trying to get a vote and he was perhaps not real sure how he was going to vote, or we knew he was going to vote in opposition and there was, and it was going to be going out of committee and we wanted to put some pressure on, we would get a call from New York and they would give us a message verbatim. Well, this is something that I think is important, because have you ever played the game where you whisper a message in someone's ear and by the time you get around to the other side it's a whole different message? And so writing down the message verbatim is rather important. And as in the case of our quick line, my husband or myself are called from the, I am still saying New York, Bread for the World, we moved from New York to Washington in this last year, a call from Washington, D.C., and an alternate person if we're not home. And then there are quick lines that are set up in different ways, but the way that we have our quick line set up is that, all right, we're called, and then my husband and myself call two people, but then from then on, the calls just go, you call one person. Let's say I call you, and you are supposed to call to the person next to you, and she's not home. Well, you call her again. She's still not home. Then you go on to the next person, and you keep going down the line until you have gone all the way down the quick line. And in our case, we have 50 people on our quick line, and the last people on the line are notified, because everyone has a sheet like this. And this is, I did this rather quickly, so it's not a real good example, but the person at the bottom, there should be a note, please call the first person on the list again, so that you know that the whole quick line has been activated, so the last people call the contact people again. We have found that having people only call one person works a lot better, because before we had people calling two or three people, and oftentimes if people did not have a real strong commitment, they would get rather discouraged if they couldn't get a hold of that person. Whereas if they're just calling one person, they're more likely to do that. And We find that this has been a very effective tool. I'm also involved in the nuclear freeze, and we have found our QuickLine to be very, very effective on issues that we need to have acted on very quickly. And one thing I might want to say to you, if you're interested in doing this, you're welcome to take this little handout that I have, is that we find we get a lot of people who are very busy, who do not have the time perhaps to go to meetings, but want to be involved. And this is a type of activity that we find we have a large number of people who want to be involved in this, because for one thing, we have found that we get results from it, and people like to be involved in something that gets results. And also, it's something that does not involve a lot of time, and you're being told what to say. I mean, if you have questions about, well, you know, I don't feel comfortable with this, what does this message mean? We say, please contact the contact person, because they're most likely to know more about the message if you're not feeling like you have enough information on it. I want to stop right now. Are there any questions or comments at this point?
Now, each person you contact then writes a letter. Is that the idea?
No. In the case of the QuickLine, I'm sorry, I didn't say this. It's normally a call or a telegram. Uh-huh. Like an example would be, we got a call saying, please contact John Block, who's the Secretary of Agriculture, within the next 48 hours, either send a mailgram or call his office.
Yeah, right.
So it is involving, oftentimes, if it's somebody, particularly if it's like the president or someone in the cabinet, it does involve some money. But normally, most of the senators and representatives, maybe not all the representatives, often have toll-free numbers. And that's something you might want to check on when you get home. If your particular congresspeople have toll-free numbers, so you can call Washington directly. I'd like to talk now about the Covenant Church program, and I think I'm going to let Art talk about this, because I think that I have not had a lot of contact with working with Covenant Church, and so why don't you just maybe mention a little bit about that?
Well, 2 or 3 years ago, we were increasingly getting requests from people who want to know how their churches could plug in, you know, as well as individual memberships. And so we did a little scientific polling of some of the congregations who were involved, and we came up with this idea of a Covenant Church program. It's a program in which a congregation can enter a covenant with Bread for the World for 1 year, and then it's renewable every year. In which we agree to supply certain informations and materials and resources to the congregation. The congregation, in turn, agrees to give some support to Bread for the World financially. It's proven to be very useful to the congregations who've been part of it. I wonder if there are any congregations represented here who have been in the Covenant Church program. There are a number of ALC and LCA congregations in it. It's geared not only for Bread for the World stuff, but also providing resources and suggestions for other ways in which congregations can participate in the hunger program, like getting involved locally, supporting Lutheran World Relief in the case of Lutherans. And one of the things we found is that congregations who join the Covenant Church program, rather than siphoning money off from the denominational hunger appeals or relief and development efforts, it has a very opposite effect, because one of the things we do is encourage increased contributions for private work too. So there's a folder on this up here, and anybody who'd like to pick one up and take a look at it, just, you know, do that. It's a nice, you know, if a congregation does this, then it's got a little bit of a built-in institutional way of dealing with the issue and carrying it over a longer period of time, and helps the congregation to program this so that the people are exposed to it on a somewhat regular basis.
We don't. I'm from Sioux Falls, and we have a few churches in Sioux Falls who are Covenant Church members. We are working on having more. And some of the churches that I've gone and talked to the pastors, one of the things that we encourage is that this be something that the church has ownership of. That is, if you have a particular church and society committee, that this isn't something that just that committee is, or commission is involved in, but the whole church. And one way that, I mentioned that materials are sent out, and one of the things that's sent out quarterly that I think is very good is called Leaven. And it has a number of different things for suggestions for congregations. One particular thing is it has, every quarter it has a bulletin insert that you can run off and use. It has responsive scriptures. It has a litany, sermon notes, things that you can add into your bulletin, resources. A lot of people say we want some good books and we really don't know what, you know, where to look. And one time they had a play that was added into it, and I knew of some churches that did that and had very good responses. And are there any questions about the Covenant Church program that maybe we haven't covered that you might have? Okay. Now I'd like to talk about something that I'm excited about. It's called the Hunger Watch USA. Has anyone ever heard of this? The Hunger Watch USA is a survey that is looking into the effects of the budget cuts on particularly, solely food programs from October of 1981 to the present. And the programs that it's focusing on are the food stamp program, the WIC program, which is the Women's Infants and Children's program, which is a supplemental feeding program for pregnant and breastfeeding mothers and their children, the Child Care Food Program, Elderly Nutrition Programs, and private and volunteer agencies such as food banks and Salvation Army, Union Gospel Mission, and so on. I'm very excited about this because I presented this to we have a clearinghouse in South Dakota called the Peace and Justice Center, which deals, its main three issues are the nuclear issue, the hunger issue, and Indian concerns, since South Dakota has a high Indian population. And they have chosen to use this on a statewide level, so when I get back, hopefully there's going to be a good response to this, setting up steering committees throughout the state to be implementing this study. And basically what it is a how-to of how you implement this survey. And at the beginning, it just tells you how to do a hunger watch, and explaining lots of how you contact people, how you contact the media, and then you have the surveys, and the first page has a program description, such as the food stamp program. What really is the food stamp program? Then the questionnaires, such as the questions for state and local food stamp administrators. And then, very importantly, questions for food stamp recipients. What has been the effect with the budget cuts on people who are on food stamps themselves? And we have found this to be a very, very interesting study, because not only statistically to find out what's happening in your community, but also to get some profiles. What are happening to people? Because hunger isn't an abstract concept. It's something that has a face that looks like either yours or mine. And so it goes through and explains the different programs. And then at the end, the last section of it is some very helpful things, because you don't want to just have this information and not get it out to your community. And it shows you how to send out press releases, how to hold a press conference. Before, probably 3 years ago, I really didn't know anything about how to send out press releases or how to do press conferences or anything like that. But the media is interested. You know, before I thought, oh, nobody will come. You know, but they come. And I find, I really struggle with this. I have found that I have gotten more reaction in a two-minute television interview than I have in work that I have done, just kind of stomping the pavement. And so I say, the media has a very large influence in our lives, and I think we need to take that in effect. And so we want to get this information out to the media so that we can reach those people, particularly since, at least in our town, fewer and fewer people are buying the newspaper. More and more people are watching the nightly news and relying on that to inform them on what's going on in the community. We found, if you're interested in knowing, I coordinated this in our county, and we found very interestingly that one particular statistic that we found was that some of the private agencies, such as our food bank, had doubled or even some of them tripled their services that were needed in the past year. And we found that very interesting. We also found that in some of the programs, statistically, that we were not seeing as strong of results as we thought we would. But interestingly enough, sometimes when you, if any of you have done research, and I haven't really done that much, but I'm finding it very interesting, that when you just begin to start on something, you find there's a lot of questions that maybe aren't being asked that you need to ask. One particular example was that we weren't finding that as many people were not getting services, as there wasn't as much of a rise in need for services in the child care program as we thought there would be. But then come to find out that there were a lot of women who weren't even qualifying because of certain restrictions that were being put on the program. So they weren't even showing up. And so one particular example would be single mothers that were wanting childcare for their children and then consequently getting the free food programs were not qualifying for that any longer. And then what happens is they have to go on welfare, because if you can't find someone to take care of your children, you can't afford childcare, well then what other options do you really have? And some of these were very interesting to me. But there's a copy of it right here. And any of the material that I've mentioned so far, you can order through this, which is a Bread for the World materials order form. And I would say that I would really encourage you, if you're interested in doing this in your community or through your church, to talk to either Arthur or myself, because we found it didn't take that many people. And it was very exciting because you're talking about hunger in your community. Particularly if you live in a community that has large layoffs, people who perhaps wouldn't classically fit what some people consider as people who are needing these services. And making hunger less abstract, maybe finding out your neighbor is being affected by this.
Can I piggyback just a little?
Yes.
You mentioned the media, and it is an almost surefire media catcher.
Oh, yeah.
If you get a profile of hunger in a town or a county, you know, the press, the TV and radio, they're almost certain to pick it up and do something. It's a very concrete thing. It has some, you know, there are a lot of issues that we think are important that you never know who's going to pick it up and how much you're going to do with it. But this is one that is almost a sure catcher. It also has the benefit of not only gets in the media, but it's very useful with Congress. I mean, where this has happened, it's had an impact on members of Congress. And some of the results of the Hunger Watch surveys have been presented in congressional testimony, at congressional hearings. Last week, as many of you know, President Reagan announced that he would appoint a 12-member task force to look at the whole question of hunger in the United States, because they're getting more and more complaints that hunger is on the increase, and he's been perplexed by that. Well, again, I think that some of the Hunger Watch surveys are going to be very useful data to throw at the task force. Could be very significant.
Yeah, I fail to say it's not only used on local level, but all we send our results back to Washington. And you know, some people say, "Oh, but it, you know, TV money or radio or whatever costs so much." I tell you, we have gotten so much free. I mean, we get asked to talk on talk shows, and the news comes, and when you hold a press conference, and I, you know, because I'm the contact person, I get called by the radio, okay, will you do an interview? And you don't, it's very, if you have a story they're interested in, you don't have to pay for airtime. They're more than willing to want to come to you.
Is this something that you can do on a local, I mean, like just a community, county, or?
Oh, yes.
Yes,
that's the purpose of it. We did it for Minnehaha County, because the reason we did it for a county rather than a town was because most statistics do you find this? Most statistics are on a county or a state level, and well, the state is usually broken down into counties, so it's easier for us to do it for the whole county. And we got, and one other thing, if you're interested in doing this, I might just want to mention in case you don't talk to me, is that a lot of the information you can get through writing the state office. We found that we went to the county representatives and they all sent us to the state saying you will have to write to the state for this information. Most all of these statistics or questions, you know, answers to these questions are at the state level, and so that's something that might help you. Are there any other questions on this?
You mentioned letter writing earlier, and it occurred to me that to get a little more mileage out of your letters, maybe they could be changed a little bit and sent to the editor of the local newspaper.
Yes, that's a very good
point. Get a little more exposure that way.
Right. Letters to the editor are very, very important. And what we find is interesting is that if we write a letter, we have a particular representative in our state, our only representative, as a matter of fact, Tom Daschle. We write a letter to the editor and say, you know, we really feel, Daschle has been an advocate for Bread for the World. And we write and say, we really think what he's doing is great. Not only do we have found, not only do we get press and people are, everybody reads letters to the editor. Do most of you read the letters to the editor in your town paper? I tell you, that is really the hotbed, at least in our town paper. Everybody reads that. Maybe they don't read anything else. But we also often get reactions from the Daschle's office. Oh, thank you for writing that letter to the editor. They're so appreciative and encouraging them to continue to work on this, because they not only need nudging when we feel they're going in the wrong direction, but they need thanks when we feel that they're doing something that we are appreciative of.
Again, could I just throw,
yeah.
That's a good example of a technique with letters to the editor that's very effective. You know, Daschle happens to be very supportive, but a lot of members of Congress aren't, or maybe they're in the middle. If, as you present the issue, one way or another, you can bring in the name of the member of Congress, you can be dead certain that member of Congress is going to read that letter, and his office will know about it. You can just say, you know, we're interested in such and such an issue, and we hope that Congressman or Congresswoman so and so will pay attention to this when it comes up for vote. You know that they're going to see that. So.
Another, now kind of changing gears a little bit and moving into Bible study, because, you know, Bread for the World is a Christian citizens' lobby organization, and it is based on the belief that Jesus asked us and commanded us, and as by his example, to feed the poor. Bread for the World has a number of different Bible studies, but one that I have here with me today is called Hunger and Oppression, Justice and Hope, and it's 7 Bible studies. Something that you might want to use in your church, or if you want to have a neighborhood Bible study, or just for devotions. They're quite short, and if you'd like to take a look at that. I also, I guess it's a little presumptuous of me, I guess, but I have one that I did in a church, and I want to say, I didn't get the, you'd think I'd have these stapled by now, but this is one copy there, just, you know, this is one, and it basically goes along with this book, Rich Christians in an Age of Hunger, which I would highly recommend. I'd also highly recommend Bread for the World, but it's on reserve in the library, and I didn't bring any of my books with me. I decided to use all the books from the library. By the way, all the books here, except maybe 3 or 4, you could all get from the library. So if you're interested in taking a look at any of these books, what I've done is I have not checked the card out. So I will leave these here, and if you're interested in looking at them afterwards and checking them out, just take the book, go back to the library, fill out your name, and put this in the card file they have there. But this is a Bible study that I've come up with, just basically some questions and then scriptures to go along with them. I did not include my notes because that would have taken much too much room. But basically, they have come from this book, and using this book as a resource. Now I want to move into some other kind of creative ways that you might be able to make hunger and bring hunger before your congregation or your community. I feel that sometimes we're often very word-oriented, and people get awfully tired of words. And my husband is an artist, and he has the firm belief that people deal primarily from image and then word. And so this is a book called Swords into Plowshares, and it's a collection of plays about peace and justice, and it's put out by the Brethren Press. And there's some plays on the hunger issue in the back, and one is called To Feed the Hungry, and another is Mirabah is Hungry. And it might be kind of a different, they're both rather short, something that you could do perhaps as a in the service itself, or for an evening get-together, or whatever. But I just think that it's exciting to try some different avenues to heighten people's awareness. And another book that they have, this one is not in the bookstore here, but this one is, and it's Finding a Way, and it's a collection of plays of the Hyde Park Lutheran Church that they wrote from 1971 to 1973. And this is in the bookstore. Another idea that you might want to use in your community and church, and I'd like to ask, have any of you ever done this, is have a hunger awareness dinner. Have any of you ever had a... Okay, there's a few of you. It's been interesting. Every week there have been some people who have used this in their church. There's many, many different ways to do a hunger awareness dinner. And this particular little booklet that is from the library explains three different ways that you can do them. Now, I have done them. One way that I did it that's a little bit different than using food, and I guess it wouldn't really classify as a dinner, but I did it in the school systems, and I had pictures of food because, you know, they weren't going to, the public school system wasn't going to change their ways for mine, so, and it still got the evoked response. I'm interested. Judy, what did you do in yours? How did you set your dinner up?
The kids did one where some people had more than others.
Uh-huh.
That kind of an arrangement. See the kind of dialogue you get, and competition and that sort of thing among them. We've had a soup, what do we call it? Where everybody brought a certain amount of soup, and that's all they had to eat, but then we put it all together in a great big pot.
Uh-huh.
And then showed some films along with it as an awareness. And then some just eating this.
Uh-huh.
Eating a smaller dinner.
Right. One idea that was done in our particular college is, my husband teaches college, is they would have the option for the students to have rice instead of the meal. And then that money, that the difference between how much their meal would cost and the rice would be given for a designated cause. And then, as you said, there's also always education that goes along with this. You know, you just don't do something like this and then not give people some information, whether it be showing a film strip, doing a play. Now, a play would be an excellent discussion starter, and always have time for discussion, for people to be able to express how they're feeling about this. I just like to interject that the two very interesting hunger awareness dinners that have been mentioned, I've done this nine times, and so I've kind of gotten some interesting input from people who've come, is one woman, they did not tell people what they were going to. And, oh my, it really was quite, people got quite upset. And they did not have to pay to come to this. And yet the tickets were color-coded, and statistically, you know, according to the population distribution and how different nations eat, the tables were set up like that, and people were very angry. But there was a lot of negotiating that happened, and then the people that had the huge feast from the first world, they began to negotiate to give some of their food to the people who did not have as much.
Another idea is, not exactly. Oh, go ahead.
I'd like to interject there. I've been involved in two of those hunger awareness dinners of that nature, and the first went pretty much exactly as you explained, and the second was a little more interesting. It involved.
Did they know they were going?
Yes,
to
Yes, all both times they know they were going to this, but the second time there was a faculty member that represented or had some special knowledge of each region of the world, and. The second dinner literally ended in chaos. It really acted out a situation or a scenario that, you know, is a possibility. And that was almost more educative than the first.
Well, what happened? I mean, why did it end in chaos?
Literally, from the people who were representing the Central America and South American countries flooded in and took food, and it just was, it was amazing to watch. Good little Christian songs and eating their food. It was really amazing. It was, I was awed by the experience. It was funny. But I think people began to realize, one lesson I learned from that is that leaders are going to have a major say in how this whole issue ends up, and that leaders need to be developed who will be able to negotiate and work towards this, or I fear that it will end in a situation such as that one.
Yeah. So
it was encouraging for me, I think, because I saw how it could end up,
right,
and discouraging to see how it also might. So it's really interesting.
Our youth, that parallels our youth situation, because there was a lot of hostility.
Oh, there
that
was.
Developed. And the kids don't suppress all that and act nice. They got, some of them got really mad on both sides of the table.
Yeah.
Isn't that, that's very interesting. Because does that key into how central and close food is to us? I mean, really, it's, and that you, somehow when you add the element of the actual thing, you know, rather than talking about food, but adding the element of having a dinner, and some people not getting any, another way that it's been, oh, go ahead.
Just granted, we did something in our church that was similar. It was an ALCW meeting, and the program person presented a program on hunger, and then of course you always look forward to your cake and ice cream. And then she brought out rice and water.
Isn't
it was really, it was really strange.
That
the
took
reaction.
Courage on
yeah.
the part.
It did. You believe me.
Women, a group of women. I mean, you know, because I know the. I'm not saying that men wouldn't have reacted as much, but being a woman and how much we get our pride or whatever from what we present at the ALCW meeting and what we are going to bring. I mean, we've really gone through something in our particular circle of trying to tone that down, but to bring rice and water. I mean, that's great.
You know, I've never been to one of those dinners, but listening to this gentleman here, this really frightens me because, you know, every one of these people know as soon as they walk out the door, there'll be plenty to eat. I mean, they can go down to McDonald's or wherever.
Yeah.
Right.
And they still reacted
that way on such a temporary situation. And the children too, huh? Mm-hmm. When they all could go home and have cookies and ice cream after, that's frightening, isn't it? Mm-hmm.
So does it start to key into how the people who can't go to McDonald's, I mean, it seems as how they are not going to be appeased. And that,
no.
In one of the particular books that I recommend, the particular author, I don't think he says it so much in his book, but in talking to him personally, say he thinks revolution is a very, you know, he does not rule that out. And the French Revolution didn't, part of the actual impetus of how it started was the lack of bread. Wasn't that the lack of white bread? I mean, that wasn't the reason, but one of the things that kind of set the fire off. People, that's a basic need. We have to eat.
I'd like to comment a little bit on that McDonald's deal, not only because that's my name, but that could be part of the problem, too, sometimes, that too many of these people with limited incomes spend too much of it in fast food fields instead of. We had a situation in our county where a pastor was looking for some help for some people. And talking to him on the phone, I said, "Well, what kind of a woman is this?" I said, "We have, my wife is a home economist, and she doesn't like to put out money." Okay, I said, "We have 25 pounds of rice here, a big sack of oatmeal, and a list of potatoes and some other things." Jack said, "Well, I don't think she'd be able to handle that, be able to use that. We had to contribute money to her. She just couldn't use fables.
Well, you know, it's interesting you mentioned that, because last week when we did the session, a woman who was here saying that before the food stamp program started, it was the commodity program, and people got commodities rather than the quote money. And she was saying she didn't know how to use that rice. And one of the things I feel that needs to be accompanying this is education. That is something that's very integral to the WIC program, the Women's Infants and Children program. The women are required to take the education along with the supplements they're getting. A lot of people, you'd say, oh, no, really, give me a break. People know how to use rice in this. But some people do not know how to use these things, do not know how to cook them in a way to make them edible. I mean, they might make them, but haven't you ever seen the commercial where the rice comes out like glue, you know? So I think that's a good point. We have to not only give
it
people...
It has to be in a little box with directions.
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah. Go ahead.
I really hear what you're saying on that point. Their education in food is something that's really necessary, and well, that's one of the gifts I think Holden offers to people who come here for a chance to learn. But I think also on the other side of the coin, we have to remember that culturally, the poor are fighting with the same,
yeah,
the same affluent nature of our nation as,
yeah,
the rich, and that's a difficult thing for them as well. Hunger is something that has many sides.
And to say, and one thing I've had to come up against, and it's very difficult, but do we all have the right to determine our own destiny? And when we are given, we get so uptight when we start talking about socialism and talking about communism. But if we give out food aid and say, all right, but this is the only way you can use it, are we starting to put some restrictions on people of saying, I mean, certain restrictions I think are right, and food stamps are supposed to have those restrictions. You're supposed to be able to only use them for edible products. That's not always, as last week we found that some merchants will take it for liquor and cigarettes, and they're not supposed to do that. But when we give our aid, how much right do we have to say exactly how that's going to be used? It's just a question. But moving on, unless there's another comment or question, I don't want to...
Another, in this dialogue that's going on, is another part that concerns me, and that's that, you know, there's the side of, well, not wanting to give money, and I to a certain extent agree with that, and then there's the not knowing how to use the rice, but right in, kind of intertwined in that, is a problem that seems, sometimes you know, you probably know better than I how much statistically it's because they don't know how to use it. But sometimes it's also so entrenched in the depression of, it's easier to, if I have, you know, something, so I can go get a prepared food or a McDonald's or whatever. There's such a depression about trying to create something edible out of a bag of rice. I mean, that takes a lot of energy.
Yeah.
And I feel a lot of concern about that. And like, is it a matter of just a process, a lengthy process of being individual with people, mm-hmm, of educating as well as caring about people?
I think some of it ties into what you said about the aspirations. Don't we all have these aspirations to be better off? And the poor have them just as much as we do. And in quote, to buy a prepared food, something that's all ready, that's something that the rich can do. I know that I worked with a woman on an individual level who we would have had for a long time gave her money. She'd go out and she'd buy, she would buy things that were just such a poor use of her money. And I was feeling I was struggling a lot with that. And then we sat down and talked. One time we gave her some money and she went out and bought a new pair of shoes. She had three pairs of shoes in her closet that were perfectly good. She said, oh, but I just wanted, that depression is a very, very key element. She wanted something that she couldn't have. And so what we finally moved into doing is that we went with her, she did not have a car, and we would buy groceries with her. And we did put some guidelines on what we felt she needed. for herself, because she'd always complained that she wasn't getting nutritional food. And then she admitted that she needed some support in that. And we were friends. We weren't two people that didn't know each other, so we could have that dialogue. But I think that that's a good point, that the poor don't want to be poor. They're angry about being poor, and they want the same things that we want. So
they, you know, they see on television that Coke is it, you know, it's the real thing.
Yeah.
They'd like to have a little bit of it too, and you know, right. It may not be the smartest thing to use their food stamps on, but some of that's going to happen.
Yeah.
There's one thing that always disturbs me when I hear affluent people like myself see something on TV of the poor, and maybe someone going into the home and doing an interview, and they see that they have a nice appearing couch, and they have a TV, and immediately we have a tendency to say that they don't need help, or they, because they have a TV, that seems to be, it's like TVs, even though it may be somewhat against some of the Holden philosophy that we're receiving here, it's a staple.
Yeah.
And I just don't understand that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, oh, well, we have a woman in our town who is a real advocate, and boy, she says she dresses to the T, and yet she was on welfare for years, and she said, why am I supposed to walk around like a slob because my husband left me, and I have to raise these three kids, and I don't want to leave them alone, you know? And that, and she really hit it on the head. I mean, she dressed very stylishly, and what did she get harassed most about was that. Well, what is she doing dressing like this? She said, have you ever noticed I always wear the same outfit to all these interviews, but it's a nice outfit? You know, it's interesting. I just want to move on and just share a few more of these books, and then we'll hopefully have a little bit of time for sharing. These are two booklets that are both in the bookstore, and I think would be very interesting for you to use. If you're interested in lifestyle assessment, which to me, all of this question leads into assessment of our lifestyles, and it's called A Covenant Group for Lifestyle Assessment, and by William Gibson, and it has 6 weeks. Yeah, 6 weeks of sessions, and on a different number of different issues. But one example would be consuming, and then it has a breakdown of the particular program that you might want to do with activities, readings, sometimes little skits, and something that would be very good for an adult. If you have, as I know, John and Melinda, right? You have a small group in your church. Something might be interesting for a small group if your church has caring groups. In your church. And this particular book, the issues are consuming, conserving, sharing, playing, advocating, and giving. And it might be something interesting for you to look at. If any of you have small children, or not even so small of children, lifestyle change for children. And naturally, because it's for children, it has a number of activities. And one thing that I thought was interesting was making you more aware of how other cultures live, and examples of different things that different cultures do. Another book, Congressional Congregational Lifestyle Change for the Lean Years. This is also in the bookstore. Food, Fuel, and Future, a study program on just and humble lifestyles. And I've used this. This has come out a while ago. Yeah.
I just want to mention, Jenny, I've written a supplement for that.
For this one?
Mm, in some ways, the supplement is a less strident approach and more activity-centered,
uh-huh.
So that there's more discussion possible.
Do they have that in the bookstore?
No, but you can always just order it from me.
Okay, great. So contact Judy.
You have to use it with the book, though.
Right. It's put out by the Parish Life Resources and Adult Studies, and I've used this. This actually came out about 4 years ago, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then this is another interesting book that you might want to take a look at, Earthkeeping and Christian Stewardship of Natural Resources. Now, I don't know how much of this you have mentioned, Art, but if you're interested in just wanting to know more about the complexity of the issue, because we really haven't talked that much about the issue of hunger, and unfortunately, as I said, I missed the other sessions because I'm not feeling well, but I'd like to recommend this book, Bread and Justice, Towards a New International Economic Order, and it's basically looks at the new international economic order as was laid out by the United Nations, and I find this very, very interesting reading.
Is that available in the bookstore?
They had reordered it. They had run out of it, and it might be back in now. But it's put out by Paulus Press, by James McGinnis. And then if you just want to read a chapter, some of you maybe don't want to read a whole book, I would recommend this book. It's called The Lean Years by Richard Barnett, and he's with the Institute for Policy Studies in Washington, D.C. Very, very articulate person. The chapter, Food, Sowers, Reapers, Ranchers, and Eaters. And I think it's a very well-written, easy to read, but gets into the complexities, particularly of the international, a little bit on the international economic order, but the trade tariffs, the multinationals, because you can't talk about hunger and without talking about politics. And then I have just two, if you're interested in cookbooks, the cookbooks I wanted to bring were mainly out of the library, but this one is good. Recipes for a Small Planet. Diet for a Small Planet is kind of the Bible that started, didn't really start it, but was one of the main books that started the whole move towards decreasing meat consumption and talking about complementary protein and how we can get enough protein without high meat intake. And then this is a nice book if you have children called Loaves and Fishes. And it's a kid's introduction to healthy eating in a world of limited resources. And it has a lot of little things that you can use with your children for awareness. Naturally, Art Simon's book, Bread for the World. And then also I want to recommend Hunger for Justice, right? Jack Nelson.
Mm-hmm.
And Hunger for Justice. And that's by Jack Nelson. And that's the politics of food, the whole food issue. And it's a very, very good book. They have that in the library as well. And if any of you are interested in kind of knowing what's going on right up to the minute in five different nations, particularly from the famine point of view, this is an article that was in the July 11th Time magazine, and about the droughts in five different nations. I just wanted to plug in that at the end. So, what time are we at?
We're past time, actually.
Are we?
Sorry.
Oh, I didn't. Well, thank you very much. If there's any questions this is a Food First. Food First has a whole curriculum put out. And the first week I was here, I think someone took it accidentally. But if you're a teacher, Food First has a curriculum that you can use in the schools. It could be used in the churches as well. And they have a comic here that's kind of fun. I say not only for children, but for adults, because it's amazing how many people do not know how to read. And the more we use visuals, the better it is. So.
Could I just say, too, thanks to all of you for coming out to these sessions. Really appreciate it. Anything you can do back home, get plugged in, Bread for the World, help others. Really appreciate that.
And if you're interested in knowing who the Bread for the World members are in your area, just write the address on the brochure, and they would be glad to tell you who is in your area as members. Or we'll give you a contact person, such as myself.